Listen to the voices of our world.
Class is one of the last taboos, something that you just don't talk about.
Bankruptcy is a desperate measure at the end of a long downward spiral.
What happens in a society where the belief system says, hey, anybody can make it, but the reality for so many of us is we're not?
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eleanor Ostrinsky, sitting in for Eileen Bott. It's payday, but the cash has been spent. Rent, car, electricity, gas, and phone. The dentist is waiting for payment. Two credit cards are maxed out, and you've stopped answering the phone because the credit agencies have no mercy. Threatening letters and more bills arrive every day. The family helped the first time, so you can't ask again, and the school principal called that your son just broke his leg. Did you know that over half the people filing for bankruptcy cited medical reasons? This includes poor, working class, and middle class people. And the number is growing each year. Today, we'll discuss increasing bankruptcy rates with Dr. David Himmelstein, co-author of Illness and Injury as Contributor to Bankruptcy, and we'll discuss class, the great American taboo, with Felicia Skell, co-director of Class Action. My friend, like many of us, lives paycheck to paycheck. And when she was 8 months pregnant, her husband lost his $10 an hour job and his insurance benefits. They charged basic necessities like food and clothing and let expensive insurance bills lapse. After giving birth, the hospital demanded full payment and threatened that her new baby wouldn't be released if she didn't pay. She called her father-in-law crying, and he said that it was illegal for them to keep the baby. Bills kept on piling while her husband kept looking for a new job. Eventually, she filed for bankruptcy because she just couldn't figure out how to get from under. This story is familiar to over half of the families that filed for bankruptcy each year, who say that medical problems or the birth or death of a family member led to their financial ruin. In 2001, almost 4 million adults and their dependents filed for bankruptcy. In order to investigate this matter, David Himmelstein, Elizabeth Warren, Deborah Thorne, and Steffi Woolhandler interviewed about 1,800 people in bankruptcy courts in Tennessee, Pennsylvania, Texas, California, and Illinois. The results of the study were recorded in an article called Illness and Injury as Contributor to Bankruptcy, published in the February issue of Health Affairs. I spoke about these matters with Dr. David Himmelstein, a primary care physician and associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School.
About half of all people who file for bankruptcy say that medical bills or illness was at least partly responsible for their financial downfall. And these are mostly middle-class people, mostly homeowners, many of them college graduates with reasonably good jobs. They had insurance coverage at least when they first got sick, though many of them found that that coverage evaporated after they were sick because they got sick, lost their job, and with it went their insurance coverage. So this is a common problem in our country. I mean, bankruptcy is a frequent event. More American women file for bankruptcy than graduate from college each year. And health bills are a major cause of it, and health insurance is scant protection.
Can you give us an example of somebody like that?
We found someone who had worked as a teacher and had a heart attack, and because of that was forced to leave her job, and despite that initial illness being covered, then needed ongoing medical care, which was not going to be covered by her insurance and left her with medical bills. And there were many similar stories. In many cases, there were also people who were forced to take time off from their jobs to care for a sick child or a sick elderly relative. And they lost income not because they were ill, but because of an illness of someone else in the family.
And then did they also lose their insurance because of time not spent at work?
In some cases, that was the case. In other cases, what happened was the medical bills arrived at a time when income was down, And even for people who have insurance, that insurance rarely pays the total cost of their care. I mean, my own family, our daughter had a knee injury that's common among girls soccer players, and we have Harvard faculty policy that we thought was very good coverage, left us with about $5,000 in bills that the insurance didn't pay for her care. So one can have coverage and continue to have it and still have co-payments, deductibles, and uncovered services that are very expensive.
And for most people, they don't really find out about that till they're actually in the hospital or caring for someone who is ill.
That's right. You have to be savvy and read the fine print of your insurance policy awfully carefully to know everything that might happen to you. In our own case, it turned out that my policy only covered 2 months of physical therapy to rehab from an injury, and my daughter's surgeon said she needs 6 months of physical therapy to get back from this serious knee injury, and the insurance company just said that's not our problem.
And why is it that insurance companies limit so many of the options when we pay thousands of dollars a year, each of us, to have coverage?
The simple answer is because they can, and an insurance company makes money by taking in premiums and not by paying out benefits. So anything they don't pay out stays with the insurance company, and when we look around, these are generally quite profitable businesses paying extraordinary salaries to their CEOs and other executives, and that money has to come from somewhere, and it comes from the patients.
Is there any supplementary insurance or some other plans that would cover those costs?
Very few people would have any supplementary coverage that would pick that up. It's basically out of pocket after your insurance doesn't pay. And if anything, those numbers are going to be going up because the copayments and deductibles in most of our insurance plans are going up. And if President Bush has his way, they'll go much higher. The government at this point is saying our coverage is too good and therefore people are using too much care. And the strategy that's being pursued is to say we need to pay for more of that care in order to drive us away from using so much. And what that means is bigger copayments, bigger deductibles, fewer covered services, and that is the trend. So our study is probably already a little bit out of date. The situation is almost certainly worse now than it was when we collected the data. Not only that, but the one out that people have had up till now has been bankruptcy court. You could wipe away your debts when they got too burdensome. And recently the Congress passed and the president signed changes in the bankruptcy laws that will make it much harder for people to get protection if they're in debt and can't get out of it.
Can you define the different kinds of bankruptcy?
There are really two kinds of personal bankruptcy. One where you're really in over your head and have no hope of paying off your debts. And there you go to court and the court certifies that that is the case. And basically you don't have to sell your Bible or your work tools, but pretty much everything else in most states goes and you're left penniless, but your debts are wiped out. And the second is for people who have ongoing income and some resources that give them some hope of being able to repay their debts. And there the court says to people, first sell virtually everything you own to pay off your debts, and then they set up a payment schedule that you have to keep to pay off the remaining debts over years to come. So those are the two kinds. The recent bankruptcy bill has made the first kind, where you wipe away your debts by liquidating all of your property, much harder for people to take advantage of. And I should say that under both the old and the new laws, you can only file for bankruptcy every 7 years.
And for a lot of people, they file for bankruptcy after they've mortgaged, remortgaged, even put on a third mortgage on their house in order to pay their bills.
Yeah, it was very clear talking to these people that bankruptcy is a desperate measure at the end of a long downward spiral. These are not people who sought a quick and easy way out. They had mortgaged their homes. They had taken extra jobs. They had really done everything they could. These were people who arrived desperate at the courthouse steps, and this was their last hope of getting out from under a financial catastrophe.
From what I surmise, more and more of us are actually in danger of being in that same situation as copays and other insurance fees go up.
That's exactly true. I mean, we're used to thinking of the 45 million uninsured as the people at risk. But at this point, almost everybody is at risk. If you're sick enough, long enough, you will be financially ruined.
So what are some of the policy changes that need to be made or that you would recommend?
I think ultimately we need national health insurance. Every other developed nation on the face of the earth has that. There's enough to worry about being sick without having to worry about paying the bills. And other civilized countries have said that's when the society needs to step in and help people out. And that's what we need in this country. There's no solution short of national health insurance that's really going to fix this problem. Until then, well, a rollback in the bankruptcy reform would be a simple stopgap measure that would at least help us get back to where we were in 2002. And Congress has now made bankruptcy off limits to thousands and thousands of Americans. And we ought to limit the copayments and deductibles that people have under their policies and police the insurance industry much more stringently than we do. But frankly, as long as you have people making huge profits and millions of dollars in incomes by denying care and denying payments, there's no policing that's going to effectively reverse that massive incentive.
Why do you think Congress did pass that bankruptcy bill? What was the motivation behind that?
Oh, this bill was the darling of the credit card and finance industry for a long time. They'd been pushing it as their top priority in Washington. Basically, it said you can't get out from under your credit card debts, no matter how desperate you are, no matter how little you can pay. And the credit card industry, which has been enormously profitable for a generation now, wants even bigger profits. And they were the driving force behind this legislation.
And this is incredible, given that so many people do end up paying for medical care or prescriptions or anything else that they may need because they're not working via credit cards.
Well, that's ultimately the problem, is that when people get desperate, they need a medicine, they need a doctor visit, and they don't know how to pay for it. They put it on their credit cards, and the credit card industry is saying, we're not going to let you get out from under those debts or any others, as you have been able to up till now.
Your article actually mentions that health insurance should be divorced from employment. How do you think we can go about doing that?
It makes no sense to have your job be the place you get your health insurance, because then when you're too sick to work, you lose your coverage, and that's exactly the problem we encountered. So that's what national health insurance does, and we need a bold measure to fix health care and fix our social safety net, and we need that from Republicans and Democrats. We know this problem can be fixed because no other nation has it. This is not like curing cancer or heart disease, something that we don't know how to do. We know how to do it. The only problem is that our government refuses to do it, and that's really the question, is can we make government do something that at this point is causing disaster for hundreds of thousands of Americans each year? Can we make government intervene to help those people, or will they sit on the sidelines and watch their constituents suffer?
What measures should be taken to help those on the verge of bankruptcy? Email us. Go to www.marynoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.